All right, we will call the meeting to order, and we'll start with a roll call, please.
Todd Bright.
Here.
David Byers.
Stuart Brunner for David Byers.
Eddie Cook. Peter Graves.
Here.
Dan Mazzola. Gilbert Carantia. I'm sorry.
Oh, you got her, perfect.
Oh my God, yes.
Here.
Michael Poliquin.
I'm here.
Morgan Reed.
Here.
David Stevens. Gordon Lachan.
Here.
J.R. Sloan.
Here.
Senator Don Shooter. Richard Stamniak. Rebecca Ferrari here for Richard. Representative David Stevens. We can have a call.
All right, thank you. First item of business will be, no news or notes, followed by this from our last meeting. So with that, we'll move on to the third item. Were there any comments on the meeting minutes?
I had them in already.
Okay, did you say you submitted those updates?
They are editorial in nature.
Oh, okay.
I can assure you.
All right. Those incorporated and updated. So with those editorial updates, entertain a motion to move acceptance of meeting minutes from last meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right, we'll move on to our next item, which is the Department of Administration discussing electronic procurement solution. Over to you, James.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is James Dean. I'm one of the engagement managers who has been assisting with the current pre-bid, which is where this project is in its current form. To my right is Terry Johnson, the procurement group manager for statewide technology. Basically, what is going to be run through is an overview of a solution that is going to go out to RFP that will ultimately reach the $1 million threshold when it's ready for award. Basically, what we're looking at is a new solution for procurement to replace existing items such as ProcureAZ into a new solution. So what I'll do is I'll hand it over to Terry and she'll walk you through the presentation. And again, this is an informational item only because it is pre-RFP stages. It will come back to ITAC, which will be able to answer more descriptive definitions and answers based upon the RFP responses. So just keep that in mind, and there we go. Terry, it's all yours.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, distinguished members. Thank you for your time this afternoon. So as referenced, yes, we are going to be talking this afternoon about an electronic procurement solution. Can you move that forward? Which will in effect be a replacement for ProcureAZ. That is what is the tool today that most folks are familiar with. We're hoping that this new solution or even a possible upgrade for the management of the procure-to-pay process, primarily meaning the solicitation process through the evaluation contract award, the ordering or the PO issuance, and then certainly processing of the invoices and payments. So our current issue brought before us today primarily our compatibility issues with the current system and the Arizona Information Financial Information System, also known as AFIS. Integration between the two systems is currently very inefficient, resulting in agencies today having to add additional staffing, whether that be permanent FTE or temporary staff, to manage the entire procure-to-pay process, with the majority of that activity and energy being spent on the actual payment of the invoices once services and products have been received. So multiple workarounds to fix this integration issue will require substantial testing time and definitely additional costs, as we've analyzed today. The current issue also, more importantly, we are in non-compliance with ARS Title 35 relative to payments net 30. We've not been successful in that since the integration of Procurezy into APHIS. So we have multiple payment delays today, which also results in duplication of effort, inaccurate and blocked payments to vendors through the system integration, all based on different system-based codes between the two suppliers, which results even further down to poor system performance, tremendous downtime, slow response times, which also adds to the angst of not being able to get invoices paid promptly. So the solution benefit that we see in this offering is that it advances the state's focus on lean values and systems, lower total cost of ownership, upgrade costs potentially lower, new technology, new economy, the one this was first purchased, payment of invoices in a timely fashion resulting in compliance with Title 35, very important, and the ability to take advantage of prompt payment discounts, which is with our new focus on cost reductions and cost savings, that is a definite tool we have not been able to take advantage of in our negotiation, our renewed negotiation process, prompt payment discounts. Richer business intelligence, which naturally will allow for smarter procurement decisions based on accurate spend data and strong analytics. So the risks of taking no action is our continuing non-compliance to Title 35. Definitely potential exposure for greater claims filings and or potential contract breach by the state. As within all of our solicitations and subsequent contracts, we do make the definite promise of paying in net 30. Poor business intelligence data resulting in procurement decisions based on inaccurate spend information, right? We're starting from a poor place when it comes to negotiations, or having to retrieve data from multiple sources, which can be potentially unreliable, maybe even overlapping of data, making the numbers appear larger than what they are, or definitely not capturing all the data, so we're not fully informed. Slowdown of agency financial operations, or increased FTE expense due to requirements of additional FTE count to process documents, and continued lack of functionality regarding modern sourcing methods. We have not been able to take advantage of reverse auctions and or the ability for online catalog ordering in its richest sense. Today, we have minimal access to catalog ordering, but we can definitely delve deeper into catalog ordering. So the timeline and cost today is we are in the process today of actually putting together the requirements for a competitive RFP, and that has been ongoing since the beginning of April to date, and we hope to last well into probably the second week of May. So the solicitation would be available on or around early May timeframe and through June 2016. The evaluation period from June to August. The contract awarded would be August 2016 with implementation September through December 2017. The cost is yet to be determined, as we will certainly discover that through the RFP process and the responses, but is decidedly a $1 million plus project. Any questions I may be helpful with?
Mr. Chairman?
I guess the only question that I have really relates to APHIS more than the procurement system. And as you know, some of the more modern financial management platforms provide for support of the procurement functions and procurement processes. But it appears that you're going to move ahead with perhaps a best of breed approach for procured pay solutions. What is the plan regarding APHIS and the degree to which procurement might be a part of a new financial management platform?
Distinguished member, Mr. Chairman, distinguished member. The concept today as we see it is APHIS is the system of record today for financial transactions. So our plan is naturally to be able to, again, connect the two in a more wholesome way, and it's purely based on the integration. So when APHIS was originally procured back in 2013, I was the procurement officer in that particular procurement. The decision was decidedly solid at the time that we would attempt the integration with CureAZ. Again, total disconnect based on the technologies. So we made the investment in the APHIS replacement system, ergo, we did not choose to purchase that purchasing model, which would have given us a full suite of what an ERP should look like, sans maybe any of the human capital management components. So we were really in the spot of trying to connect an older technology in with an established financial technology. And unfortunately, distinguished member, we did miss that. We missed that. So this is our one attempt for a very relatively small investment to be able to correct that error to lead us to a world-class financial and procurement system that can talk timely in real time.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. I didn't have the history on it, APHIS, that you just provided. So
thank you.
Thanks.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. See you in August. All right, our next item on the agenda would be Department of Economic Security and the YCAD consortium.
Mr. Chair, since I'm an employee of the Department of DES, I'm going to recuse myself from items 5, 6, and 7.
Okay, so noted. So Braylon did hear that Mr. Bryant will be recusing himself from the voting process for the next few items, and we'll move forward with that in mind. James, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. So currently, DES uses applications which support the Division of Employment and Rehabilitation Services, also known as DERS, which currently reside on a mainframe. The original deployment of some of the applications was as long ago as 1986. Over the years, additional applications have been added to support DES and their needs. However, they're also run on the mainframe, which makes the system difficult to manage and upgrades and modifications extremely difficult. So in 2012, a consortium was formed, which included the state of Arizona, to leverage an existing system in use today, which is U.S. Department of Labor certified. Along with common base requirements, Arizona-specific requirements were also gathered to ensure the development of the system would meet the needs of DES and its customers ongoing. So the development of the solution is planned as a phased approach and is 100% federally funded through a federal grant. So at this time, ACID is recommending that the pitch be approved, for now I'll turn it over to Stephen Welsh, the CIO for the Department of Economic Security, to give you some more information on the project.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, member of the board. My name is Stephen Welsh. I'm the Assistant Director for the Department of Economic Security. Today we'll be going through the transfer system that is currently going live in Missouri in May, in a month, and there is a system in Mississippi that's been in production for a while. The system that we will be transferring in is heavily federally mandated by definition, and approximately an 80% fit to what we currently need, and we're doing a 20% modification. It is FedRAMP compliant, and the vendor of the system doing development will maintain that FedRAMP compliance. At completion of this project, all 12 modules of the system will go away and essentially retire the mainframe applications. This next slide highlights how busy this system is. Approximately 130,000 claims are processed annually. Almost 2 million weekly certifications on an annualized basis. 26 million receive financial assistance employers annually, and almost 12 million in wage records presented annually, and 20,000 appeals. The system that we currently have has been around for a significant period of time, approximately 30 years. This system is configured using Atabase and COBOL. It is inflexible, it's written in an old language, it's difficult to interface, it's difficult to get some leverage out of that, and it's not robust enough for the integration with the federal systems. Data reliability is an issue. Security systems, we have another PC-based system that connects to that, and there are some issues with that. And customer of access, it's locked into the mainframe, and it's difficult for users to remotely access this. And it adds a lot of work to the staff who have to process these things. So the good news here is that there are no costs associated with the state for this project. We are part of a consortium, and the consortium sends funds essentially through one of the consortium members directly to the vendor. If we look down at the bottom of the page, we currently have images which are stored here in Arizona at DES, and there is a conversion charge which is paid for Flight Affairs to the tune of about $400,000, and once we're in production, there'll be about $3.2 million annually for maintenance of that. We have a timeline here, and there's three phases to this. So risks and mitigations of this particular project. This is a multi-phase, three-phase development with transfer systems in from states that are already running this. One is about to run this, and we have three more behind us in the hopper that will be using it. I think that the work that's done so far has given us high confidence that we will be able to transfer this into Arizona and be successful with that. Using the agile development lifecycle, so we can very quickly tell if the system is off track and be able to make the necessary corrections in a timely manner to bring those back to Unity. We will be bridging with the existing system. This is in stage 2 and 3. And completing that. And then we have impacts to the community and new system training and organizational changes. So the benefits are we'll have a new modern system that is used by other states. We will completely retire our existing system. We have guaranteed federal funding for this particular project. The system will be in a modern development mode, so flexibility and interfacing. Also, changes that periodically come through, we'll be able to adapt to those. Improved customer experience and consortium model. So we've tried to minimize the risks as much as possible. And get a system for the state that works as well as possible, both now and for the foreseeable future.
Okay, with that, we'll move over to questions from the committee.
So, Mr. Chairman, just one question. As a member of the consortium, how much involvement have you had in the or participation have you had in the design of the 80% solution that they're working on?
Mr. Chairman, distinguished member, members of the committee, the solution came to us as a transfer, so 100% of that came to us, and 80% of those requirements meet Arizona's needs. Mm-hmm. We did that through a method of using our already identified requirements and having the vendor and the consortium review those requirements against their base model and identify whether those items existed in the system already or were absent from the system.
Okay,
Chairman. We've also been on several field trips to the location to review the software and review how the states are implementing it.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Stuart, can you give me a sense of the magnitude of those 436 requirements that are not available in the target system? I mean, are we talking about, my sense is from the money involved, we're talking about a huge development effort here, not just a, I believe, Ms. Rolsh, you said, we'll just kind of adopt it in, or, I had the quote, sorry, I had, that it was just going to be transferring in. We'll just be transferring these things in. And it's a huge development thing, so give me a sense of how we're managing that and how big it is.
Mr. Chairman, Stuart, 80% of the system is essentially statute-based at the federal level down to us. So that piece would essentially be transferring in. The 20%, I think to your point, is not a trivial piece, and we'll certainly be working through that. However, the vendor has significant experience in this area, both previously with a state that's in production and recently with Missouri that's about to go into production. So we do not see this as a new challenge, but only a new challenge as far as Arizona is concerned.
If I can follow up one thing, so what is the percentage then that those other two states were at with the federal requirements versus their state-specific requirements? Are they equivalent of Arizona, or better or worse?
Mr. Chairman, distinguished member, the two states that came before us assisted in the development of the system, so their needs were immediately met. So the 436 requirements that you mentioned are specific to Arizona and Wyoming, and they're just past what the federal regulations guide us. So whereas one state may not do a specific activity, Arizona does, so we have to incorporate that requirement by our statute. So we're certainly not taking those requirements lightly. And the requirements remaining out of the 2253 that we identified are met in the system, but they may need to be specifically looked at to make sure that not only are they met, but they're met the way that our statute and regulation dictates.
Sure. And there's the business process sort of changes that are going to go along with that. The system does one thing, that you do it another way.
So. Yes, sir.
I'll let somebody else.
No question, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Let's talk about data sharing. I imagine since this is federally funded, there's going to be some data sharing with the federal government.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Reed, members of the committee, There is data sharing with the federal government today. So we're not implementing anything beyond what we do today. We share data with not only the feds, but other states through the interstate connection, which is how states transmit unemployment insurance data between each other for out-of-state claims, federal and military claims, and things of that nature. We're not going beyond what we do today, but we do share data with the feds and consider that data to be FTI, federal tax information. So we would treat that data just as we do today.
Okay, as a follow-up, would this also allow for better and improved sharing with the other members of the consortium?
Yes. Not in a co-mingled environment, but it would allow us to interface more immediately rather than on a delayed timetable that we have today.
Okay. Second question from me. We talked about a modern system, web-based, but what is the background technology that this is built on? Not mainframe, but something else.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Reed, members of the committee, it is a Java-based application with a DB2 database that will obviously host in a FedRAMP cloud-hosted environment.
Yes. Hopefully, probably easy. 12 systems on the mainframe. What level of capacity does that take up on your mainframe? What's left?
So, Mr. Chairman, Rebecca, that's a great question. percentage-wise, I'm going to speculate this is about a 12 to 15% footprint on the mainframe. So it won't be our only application, but it will certainly add costs to the rest of the folks that are left. Mm-hmm. We have another project going in somewhat parallel with this that would mitigate some of those costs.
Any other questions?
I asked the requisite on-base question. You never seem to get through without an on-base question. You stated that there's going to be an image conversion and those are on-site images today.
Yes.
I'm assuming that those images are going to be stored somewhere with the vendor system, which would be off-site in the future. Should I be concerned then that the baseline security Excel worksheet has not been completed by the vendor or approved by ASSET at this time?
So I can actually answer that, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bruno. What has happened, the reason why is because the vendor chosen actually has a FedRAMP certification. So they have been working with ADOA ASSET very closely for security, and it was stated that if you can provide us that official documentation that you're FedRAMP compliant, we already know that you meet our standards, and so they did not have to go through the entire checklist, which is why that was selected as no on the sheet.
Yeah, and that's a contract requirement for them to remain FedRAMP compliant. Thank you.
Any more for any more?
No.
No? Back to you, James.
So at this time, we did not add any conditions for the specific project. So at that point, if there are no other questions, then Mr. Chairman, it's back to you for vote of approval.
Okay. I'm sure we'll entertain a motion with regards to this project.
Move for approval of this project.
Okay, second. All those in favor of approval of this project?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, motion carried. Thank you. Steve, you'll be sitting for round two?
Yes, sir.
He's going to the bottom. The next item again is the Department of Economic Security and their 2016 end user device refresh. James, how are you?
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, on an annual basis, DES refreshes old computer systems as a part of their policy. Anything greater than 5 years of age, they want to basically refresh every single year. We do have a new PGZ process for anything that's under $1 million. However, due to statute, we do bring items like this to here due to the size of DES because they're purchasing thousands of laptops and machinery. So this is going to be a much more briefer presentation. I just want to set the stage. We're trying to keep things like this for time-sensitive purposes, but it is a tech refresh for DES. And with that, I'll turn it over to Steve.
I have a list of computers here that are broken down by major systems. The counts are across DES, and these counts would represent a maxima of the requests, with funding potentially being significant or being less than this amount. However, we would like to ask for permission to purchase at least into this amount with funding availability. We'd also like to mention that we've leveraged the ADOA contract for this type of equipment, which offered a significant savings for us on this, so special thanks to ADA on that as well.
The savings are not shown here, by the way, so that it will only be less than what you see today when the purchases are done.
So just for clarity, that was the maximum value point agreement?
Yes.
Okay. Any questions?
One quick one, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Welch. Is there any professional services associated with imaging, transport, data, moving, any of that stuff, or is it all in this employees?
Mr. Chairman, Stuart, there are no professional services included with this. basically the little PC show up of the image of the distributed.
Okay, I had something else and I can't find it.
If I could follow up on the PC operating systems, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Welch indicates that all new PCs are being equipped with Windows 7, which I'm just wondering what the decision was on that versus 8, 8.1, or 10.
Mr. Chairman, Stuart, the reason being that we have a large organization and just the sheer momentum of the operating system and the training associated with that, we felt it best just to stay with that operating system at this time.
If I could follow up, when will Des bite the bullet on getting off of Windows 7, do you think? Or is it the XP of your foreseeable future?
It's the new XP?
Yeah, 7 is the new XP.
So there's a significant impact to the agency by moving to any new operating system, and we want to ensure that our computers, our older computers, can meet with the standards for the new operating systems so we can do this as a enterprise role at some future point.
If I could just mention, my concern is that with this periodic refresh only taking a percentage, there'll never be an impetus to actually switch it out. Or you'll have to run a mixed environment for a period of 4 or 5 years, which would mean you probably need to start pretty quickly on getting that address. So I have to look like I know something.
Gordon? Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. So what percentage of the asset base, the computer or desktop asset base, do these numbers represent? I mean, is your replacement plan an annual plan that addresses a percentage of the total asset base on a regular basis?
Mr. Chairman, Gordon, I understand the question now. We typically shoot for 25% on an annualized basis, or replace a quarter of the fleet. However, some of the numbers in here are almost 100% funded from federal funds, which fall into some of those federal cycles, which can be shorter than that or longer than that. So 4 years is our target.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I'm sorry, one follow-up. I see that the number of thin clients are being acquired here. What consideration was given to using VDI or thin client solutions as opposed to the heavyweight desktop PCs?
Mr. Chairman, Gordon, our next presentation today will directly address that, and the $328,000 will be in the desktop project. That represents is about 3,000 users, about 10,000 total. So it's about a third of the DES footprint is in thin client. We will not be replacing those thin clients as part of this request today. And I will, if we could stay till next episode, we could go into more detail on why we're moving the thin clients from this request into the following one. Timing-wise, it should have come out, but.
Okay, again, follow up then. To be clear, does the acquisition of this 1,300 thin clients add to the total percentage of thin clients in use in DES?
Mr. Chairman, Gordon, no, it does not. We are going to remain fixed at the number that we have now.
Okay, great, thank you.
All right. Last call. Okay, James, back to you.
We did not place any conditions on the refresh project, so it's back to you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We'll move forward when entertaining a motion for action with regards to the user device refresh. Will Tim look for us?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve. We have a second.
Second.
Go ahead and second for that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Stephen up for his third and final round today. We're talking about
remote desktop solution for applications used to complete eligibility calculations.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, on March 23rd, 2016, last month, ITAC approved DES's proposal to implement a new virtual desktop infrastructure solution to serve as the remote desktop solution for the Family Assistance Administration Division of Benefits and Medical Eligibility staff, and to provide a long-term strategy for remote desktop access going forward. The existing virtual desktop infrastructure is reaching end of service and currently does not meet the needs of the agency and the group that it's being purchased for, which relies heavily on the platform. So upon ITAC approval, DES moved forward with the approved plan. However, the proposed solution has actually been discontinued by the vendor. So DES is now proposing their alternate solution, which will result in the same supportable solution and architecture that will improve system responsiveness and performance during the periods of heavy concurrent usage, which Stephen will talk about in his presentation. So ASSET is recommending that this page be approved with conditions, which we can go with after the presentation. But I'll turn it back to Stephen so he can walk through this with you.
Mr. Chairman, member of the board, as we went to procure the system from Dell, it would appear that the relationship with Dell and VMware is a lot closer than at least the local representatives would have us believe. They basically refused to sell us the system, which created a secondary review onto the system, switching from Dell V Workspace to VMware. This triggered essentially an $886,000 increase from the previous approved ITAC agenda for this item, a 30% increase. The question that Gordon asked previously was the 1,300 desktops which worked with the Dell V Workspace previously were not compatible with the UVMware-based solution. Basically, HTML5 was the variance there. And that has injected about $350,000 increase, which is included in that $886,000 for that. So essentially a $500,000 increase for the technology and a $350,000 increase for the endpoints to make this solution work. And I've highlighted on the slide some of the other variances in these various areas. It's unfortunate, but I think this is a solid solution and potentially a better solution now. The endpoints we had slated, as the previous presentation suggested, to be replaced over the next year. We are accelerating that now. So from a technology perspective, we will be in a better shape. We just hadn't anticipated to work on this as soon as we had. The advantage of putting everything into one request is that now we can get federal assistance for this, what we refer to as 90-10 money for this entire project, including the endpoints which previously were out of scope in the previous request. So that has come down significantly to the cost for the state. Our timeline has essentially remained unchanged. However, we will be moving from what we refer to as a pilot project mode right at the termination of June 30th of this year into production mode in July of next fiscal year. But the system should be up and running, everything purchased, all the professional services completed. We'll just be moving forward July plus. And the risks essentially are the same as we discussed last time. It is new technology, aggressive schedule, and maybe even more aggressive now considering the July, June 30th transition.
Questions. Stuart.
Sorry, it's pretty. Mr. Chair, Mr. Welch, what kind of mitigations are being put in place for that risk of July
change over with the new technology.
Mr. Chairman, Stuart, the equipment will be purchased essentially immediately. We've got delivery guarantees from the vendor that those will be done by the end of June. Professional services to set the systems up and get those running will hopefully be done prior to the June 30th. The contingencies, if we bypass that June 30th date, will certainly be an impact on the financial side of this. Our federal partners will allow funds to be used in the next fiscal year. And we do have an existing system in place that will continue the production of the desktops in their current phase for that. So the risks are certainly identified and real.
But I follow that they're mostly financial risks. It doesn't sound like you're concerned on the technology side.
Correct, mostly financial.
Mr. Chairman, you talked about the savings to the state with the $90-$10. What have you been able to quantify what the outlay of the state will be reduced by?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Reed, the savings would, considering the last request, I'm just going to go back to a slide here. I think that this would. So we've got $500,000, so approximately $100,000 of that will be an increase from the previous request for this money. The endpoints, $350,000, that will receive 90-10 funding, where previously that was all general funded money, which
we would have purchased those in July, August, and not been able to leverage as part of the replacement pitch, and not been able to leverage the 90-10 funding. So that's kind of a significant distinction. As far as the breakdown, I could not tell you the percentages right now. What the 90-10 or 80-20, the July-August purchase, I should say. It would be significantly different. I think it's probably more like 50-50, as opposed to a 90-10 opportunity.
So just a comment, I think it's unfortunate that this happened and that you found out prior to purchase, but it's also not bad in that you're not the last person on an unsupported system, that you're going to come back and see a sooner to replace it. So that is true. Better to find it out.
Yeah. Yes. Any other questions?
So basically, Asset is recommending approval with the following conditions. Should there be a change in the proposed cost of 10% or more technology approach, the Department of Economic Security must amend the PIDs to reflect the changes and present to ITAC if required for review and approval prior to further expenditure of funds.
Okay, any questions on the conditions? Okay, if not, then we'll move forward to entertain a motion with regards to this Roam desktop solution.
Move for approval with the conditions stated.
Okay. A motion for approval with the conditions stated. We have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Gilbert. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Thank you, Stephen. Open up any other items that any members would like to raise at this time? Comments? If not, we'll call the session to a close. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.